Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome into another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. It's a Tuesday afternoon up in Ames, Iowa, the Jacobson Building overlooking Jack Trice Stadium. Just got done with Matt Campbell's press conference, his first weekly press conference of the 2021 season ahead of the season opener on Saturday against Northern Iowa at 3:30 p.m. here in Ames. We'll have all of Matt Campbell's press conference coming up later on in the podcast here in about 15-20 minutes. But wanted to bring in Rob Gray, talk a little bit about some of the things we've got coming here this week at Cyclone Fanatic, talk a little bit about the press conference, give some of our thoughts. What's up, man? How's it going?
Going well. I'm excited to be out here. I noticed when we were looking over the beautiful stadium here, Jack Trice Stadium, that they had a mock score up there, and it said Iowa State 81, Northern Iowa 0. That would be quite a shift for a season opener, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that would be a margin of victory record in school history.
I believe so.
To win 81-0.
Now, just so nobody gets too excited, like it could be a harbinger of anything to come, it also said there were 16 minutes and 9 seconds left in the fourth quarter. So they made it clear this is fantasy land we're talking about. And certainly in season openers, to get a breeze of a season opener, it doesn't happen very often for the Cyclones.
Right. And that's going to be one of the things that you're focused on this week here as we kind of get going. I mean, it's just Iowa State has rarely had anything not be weird in the season opener since Matt Campbell has been here. Obviously, you go back to his first season, the loss to Northern Iowa in the season opener. Then actually the next year was probably the closest that they've been to a relatively, you know, not stressful season opener where they, you know, kind of beat up on the Panthers in that game. And then the following year in 2017 is the – wait, which one is that?
The 2018.
Yeah, in 2018 is the rained-out game. Lightning. 2019, we have the overtime game with Northern Iowa, and then obviously last year the game against Louisiana. And you know, I'm interested just to see. And I talked a little bit to Chase Allen about this after the press conference. I'm interested just to see how, you know, he talked about them trying to find their identity kind of early in those seasons, and while they had brought a lot of guys back from all of those teams, there were still enough key pieces that were needed to be replaced, especially along the offensive and maybe not as much defensive line, some to an extent to the defensive line, but really in the offensive line, the receiving core, the running back room. I mean, that is not going to be an excuse for this team this year with the guys that they bring back at really every level on both sides of the football. Like, you shouldn't – obviously, you have some people to replace, some key people to replace, but for the most part, this identity is pretty set of what this team is going to be best at. And I'm interested to see how that can carry over now, where you don't have to have maybe some of that buffer time of building up into the season.
No question. And, you know, Coach Campbell, you know, reiterated what he's always said is, you know, you find out when, you know, when the lights come on, you find out what you've really got. And in the past, that's been good in a lot of areas. And it's like, whoa, this may be one thing we didn't anticipate, or this thing it's going to be something we got to shore up right away. And they've done it. I mean, they've, you know, all those seasons. You think about almost losing to UNI 2 years ago, and Brock Purdy recovers a fumble. Sheldon Crony redeems himself with a touchdown in overtime to win it. Look at what happened after that. In most of the season, you know, they find ways to turn that expedition of sorts of week one into some very successful seasons, some of the most successful in school history. So, like you said, though, this is a season that if you really are going to contend for the playoff, you can't
have that.
No, you can't have it even be tense. It can be. Hey, there was sloppy in some areas, and you and I, especially as a strong team defensively, which they've always been, and certainly showed that in their spring season. And you know, when you're strong up front and you're strong in the back end, that's a tough test for your offense. Now this offense has a lot of weapons and is balanced, so you should be able to say, okay, that's a good defense. Mm-hmm. So what? We're a really good offense, and we're gonna roll over it. But I don't think score matters to Coach Campbell. What did he say when somebody asked a question? You could tell he was a little bit kind of like, I don't really like the tone of that question. He said, I'm not out here to impress anyone.
Yeah, I think the question was basically, when you're trying to make the playoff, what do you need to do? How do you score style points or something like that?
Yeah, and that's just not gonna fly with Coach Campbell.
Yeah.
But
he talked about how it's fun for us to write about and all these things.
Yeah.
And I wanted to reply, it's
fun.
More fun when you win.
Yeah,
generally.
Yeah,
if you want us to have fun, just win.
Yeah,
but
like you said, in terms of you know, the so-called negative recruiting that might take place if
right.
the Big 12 and Flex, it's like, we win.
Yeah.
You know, we win.
Right.
And all that. But I just asked some of the guys, and, you know, they just talked about how crazy some of those things are. And then, you know, our friend Randy Peterson over at the Register was asking about the adjustment of playing to a full house. I mean, and you know, Brock talked about just how exciting that would be, and he probably remembered running out, even let alone playing. He wasn't playing, but ran out the first time here, and it's probably going to feel a little bit like that after last season, where, yes, it filled out a little bit. You had limited seating, friends, family, all that stuff, and some things, but I don't know. Excited, but don't put too much stock into what happens week one, because
right.
as the Cyclones have shown, it's not usually indicative of what they can and almost always do become.
Right. And one thing that Coach Campbell said that I thought was actually interesting, because I think it kind of goes against what, you know, Jeff and I have talked about this quite a bit on Football and things, you know, and I think you hear other people talk about what the impact of the FCS teams having played that spring season will be. In my mind, and I understand where Coach Campbell was coming from this, where he talked about how he felt like that maybe was an advantage having played games so recently. I guess in my mind, I don't know that I necessarily see it that way, because of the lack of a ramp down period, back into the ramp up period. Like, you kind of, the season ends and it's, you get like a couple weeks and then you got to start going again to get ready to play again. There's not going to be recovery time really for injuries and things like that. So, like, I don't necessarily agree with him. I thought that it was interesting, though, to hear him say that, how, you know, they should already be in rhythm because they played a game, even though it was almost 4 months ago now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think we have to go back to what Campbell and now his senior players have always said, is it's not about them, it's about us.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're always interested in UNI, because, you know, Mark Farley's been there a long time, he usually gets them in the playoffs, usually, outside of a weird season. And it's usually a team that, as Coach Campbell alluded to, is tough to put away. They find ways to stay in games.
Even the years when they haven't been that good, they're, you know, they'll lose to North Dakota State by a touchdown.
Yeah, and there might be one game where they kind of got blown out to one of their Missouri Valley Football Conference opponents, just because, I don't know, they turned it over five times
right.
or something. But, again, that's the hallmark of a program that hangs its hat on defense and on fundamentals. And that's why it's such a good test again. But, they'll certainly have more rhythm because they have an offensive coordinator that's been in place for a little while now.
Familiar to Iowa State fans, Mr. Sean Watson.
Shout out.
Yeah. It's not necessarily happy memories of Mr. Sean Watson, but
Cyclones.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know what to expect from that Northern Iowa offense. I mean, I feel like it's not that much to say they'll probably be better because they were pretty freaking bad in the spring.
Yeah, and they're
and they're like their offensive coordinator had left like right before the season started. You know, your starting quarterback missed two games because of COVID. I think they had some people to replace. You lose Spencer Brown, who was going to be your starting left tackle and was going to be, you know, kind of the a foundational piece for you. He obviously goes to the NFL.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're still going to have an NFL-type offensive tackle in Trevor Penning. You're going to bring back Will McElvain. From what I listened to on Mark Farley's press conference yesterday, they had not named a starter yet. They had narrowed it down to McElvain and Michigan State transfer Theo Day. I would be really surprised if it's not McElvain based on the way that Coach Farley was talking, to be completely honest. But, you know, he gave Iowa State some trouble that last time around when they came here in 2019. It was his first career start. I don't remember if he was a true freshman or a redshirt freshman, but, you know, he had a really nice game, threw for over 200 yards and was pretty efficient. Did a nice job with his feet. And he didn't necessarily run for a ton of yards, but he was effective in what he was able to do in keeping plays alive. I mean, they're going to present some challenges in those ways, even if the numbers don't look overly impressive or anything like that. They've got some guys that, you know, once things can come together, that, you know, they can probably give some teams some trouble offensively.
Yeah, I mean, they're always going to get some pieces. I mean, there's still
a running back that transferred in from Kansas that I know that they people really like too.
Yeah, I mean, they do such a good job of recruiting, not only some people in the state that maybe get a little bit overlooked. Prime example, David Johnson, back in the day, ran roughshod over the Cyclones here.
Who Coach Farley said Breece Hall reminds him of.
Yeah, and if only David could stay healthy in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
I mean, had that breakout season and all that. But they get guys, and they're really good at recruiting Minneapolis and Kansas City, and, you know, just enough in the JUCO ranks, and again, the transfers you talked about, that it's highly unlikely they're going to have an offense that's anywhere near as... unproductive, but inept is a good way of putting it. excuse me. So, you know, they'll challenge you. And like Coach Campbell said, and we've talked about, that's a good thing. And, excuse me. You know, we'll see. But as good as Iowa State's defense is in all three phases, got to think it's going to be really tough sledding. Unless if McElvain, as he showed, I mean, if it's 3rd and 7 and he can get 7.5 yards, that'll, you know, do a lot for them. But I think inside, you know, that red zone, I mean, Iowa State's going to be stingy there all year. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I don't see big plays happening against that defense.
I think that if you're a FCS team who did not have a very good offense the last time you were playing games, and you're just looking to get some sort of rhythm, Iowa State is probably one of the last teams that you would want to play.
Yeah, exactly.
To be frank about it. I mean, this is not – I don't see Iowa State's defense being a team that a lot of people are like, well, let's go out and try some new things today.
Yeah.
You know? Like, this is where you kind of got to have your bread and butter, because you know that yards just are going to be at a premium, realistically. You know, yards and points with this defense, just as over the last 5 years, have not come easily. And that's not in any way my concern. I don't think that that's going to be a major issue, unless it's a situation where Iowa State's offense is making mistakes, special teams is making mistakes, giving them short fields, putting them in, you know, ideal situations or quick turnaround situations for the defense where they're, you know, can get a 3 and out and then you fumble or something like that and you got to go right back on the field. But that's really the only way that I think Northern Iowa's offense would scare me as a fan coming into this game. I am intrigued to see the matchup of Iowa State's offensive line, which we've heard so much about. We saw last year how much improvement that group has made. And, you know, now with all the veterans coming back, you can kind of assume that that will continue. Going up against the Northern Iowa defensive line, that is, I mean, if you're looking for a strength of this team, that's the far and away strength, is that front seven. Jared Brinkman was the Missouri Valley Football Conference Defensive Player of the Year last year. Really disruptive along that as a defensive lineman there for the Panthers. They bring back some linebackers that I know that they are all conference type of players. That's going to be a good challenge for Breece Hall in this offensive line to, you know, when you've got Iowa coming the next week, we know what the Hawkeyes are always going to present in that sense of being able to stop the run. Northern Iowa's going to be able to do the same thing. This is not going to be something where you roll the balls out and it's like, all right, Breece, you're running for 200 today.
Yeah.
You know, you and I is going to make it tough on people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't sleep on that back end either. I mean, they got a legacy and a sap They got a Sapp back there.
Yeah, what's his name? Benny Sapp, right?
Either the third or...
Yeah, Benny Sapp the third.
You know, spent some time in the NFL after he had to transfer over to you, and I covered him over there, and...
That's really how old you are, man, that that Benny Sapp the third is here now after you covered his dad.
Yeah, so that means I've got institutional knowledge.
Do you feel old?
Of course I do.
I'm just giving you shit, man.
But knock on wood, no major injuries in my life, so... You know, still pretty spry.
Right, right.
For an out of shape 52-year-old man, a grizzled veteran.
Right.
But, I mean, they just, you're completely right about that. I mean, you know, you better execute the best that you can. And you need to do that every time. I mean, it's not a great revelation, but you can get away with things. If, say, Western Illinois comes to town, probably, and who knows what they have this year, but usually the Leathernecks are kind of an also-ran in the MVC.
I'm sure that all the Western Illinois fans listening to the podcast are very offended.
Going to be angry. Our friend John Bonenkamp might be disgusted, although he doesn't really. But after covering them for so long, hell, he keeps in their camp.
Yeah, I saw that.
Years ago. But it's, again, it is the perfect test. And, man, I just can't imagine what it's going to be like on game day, just to be essentially normal. And we're going to be basically almost normal, I think, for many, many months in terms of what you do. You're masked up in the press box and all that and everything else societally. But it's just tying it all together from the weirdness to the matchup and digging into that. It's just great to be here, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely is, man. Last thing I wanted to touch on really quick, something I thought that was interesting that Coach Farley talked about yesterday was the importance of these games, not only when Northern Iowa plays Iowa State, but when they play Iowa as well. You know, they kind of rotate back and forth playing the Panthers. Just the importance of this for football in the state. And, I think that that's something that Coach Campbell recognizes and has put a – onus on, I guess, inside the program of reminding people, like, hey, this is a rivalry game. Whether you know, even though they're FCS, and even though you might think, like, oh, we're FBS, we're Power Five, like, it's not even the same competition, that thing. But you're gonna get their best shot. You know, this is a huge game for Northern Iowa every year, and it's obviously a huge validator for what their program is for them to come in and beat, whether it's Iowa or Iowa State, whatever, to come in and play tough with those teams or to beat them, which they've done a handful of times. And I just think that that's crucial. You know, even though you've got all these veteran guys that played against Northern Iowa, Chase Allen was on the team that lost to Northern Iowa in 2016, but no one inside of that football building is going to be looking past Northern Iowa or anything like that, because they know full well what they're going to be walking into on Saturday, even with a full crowd and all those things, and knowing that you've got all these people at your back, like, that team over there is not going to be scared of you at all.
Absolutely. I mean, in a strange way, it comes full circle. I mean, how big was it when Chase Allen was recruited here and then got hit by a car or truck, whatever it was?
Yeah. And then what did he have, mono or something?
Yeah, yeah. And then he sees his team, his dad coached for a long time. Some great Terry coached to some great seasons. Come in and beat his Cyclones. Terry spent some time on staff here as well, but now here we are back at UNI.
Chase's younger brother plays for the Panthers now.
Yep. He was talking a little bit. He was one of the folks made available to the media and talking a little bit about how much he really wants to be able to get a little bit of bragging rights after, they did get the nice, like, comfortable win, whatever, 42-24. In 2017, but then, you know, just barely beat him in 2019, and here we are. I mean, it is good for the state. I mean, to be honest, it's much more exciting from a fan standpoint to be facing an in-state school where you know they have, and they have players that people followed as really good high school players too. I mean, it's just a different sensation than, you know, Southern Utah coming in or Sacramento State
or Fordham.
Yeah.
Like the Cornhuskers will play this weekend.
Andrew Mevis.
Huh? Andrew Mevis. Yeah, well, I'm sure Fordham's really going to take a major dip after
as losing many touchbacks as he had.
I was going to say, like, losing someone who's able to kick it through the
end zone. That's another thing we're going to
see. We learned the value of kicking it through the end zone. So
I remember just how astonished I was when I dug into the numbers and saw that Iowa State was, like, better than, like, I don't know what it was, 8 or 10 FBS schools in terms of touchback percentage.
They were better than 8?
But they were far and away the worst Power 5. Or there might have been one Power 5 that was down there, too.
Well, Nebraska's been pretty bad in that, too, so it probably was them.
But, I mean, just the schools that were barely behind them. Just to think of it, that was the one thing that statistically they were really, really, really bad in. And you hear him talk about it, it's going to be a touchback every time. So
I want to say they were, like, in the second percentile in kickoff yards allowed. Like kickoff return yards allowed or something. There was like three teams that allowed more kickoff return yards than Iowa State, and it was like on twice as many kickoffs. Like they were allowing two times as many touchdowns and field goals as what Iowa State was.
Wow.
But Iowa State was still allowing just as many kickoff returns. I think if they could cut that number in half, Iowa State probably wins two more games.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a huge, I mean, if, again, as Coach Campbell said when he was asked about especially, you know, you got to see.
Right.
But they certainly like
right.
Andrew Mavis
has never kicked in front of 60,000 people.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, it'll be interesting, man. It'll be fun. We're going to have a lot of good stuff here coming on Cyclone Fanatic throughout the rest of the week. I think Todd and Brett are – well, I told them to record Tuesday nights. We'll see if that actually happens. Sometimes those guys are kind of loose cannons. You know Todd and Brett.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, they're a little unpredictable sometimes. But hopefully we'll have that here soon in the next couple days. Action Fanatics, I think we'll have Thursday morning. Cyclone Fanatic Radio. I got to get our good friend, someone we both have immense respect for, the voice of the Panthers, Gary Rima. Going to try and get him on the show Thursday night to come on and talk about Northern Iowa. And, man, hanging up the headset after many years as the voice of Northern Iowa football and basketball too. But so looking forward to talking to him. But you'll have a bunch of great stuff here coming up in the next couple days. Chris is going to have a column hopefully tonight or tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have should be fun, man.
We'll have some stuff from coordinators.
We'll talk to the coordinators tomorrow night as well. I'll probably post those on the podcast feed late in the evening. I think that those interviews start, I think we got a range of like 4:15 to 5, so it might be, you know, late evening by the time that I'm able to get those up, but they should be ready for everybody on Thursday. So a ton of good stuff, man. We've been had probably our best month that we've ever had on the podcast feed this past month, 55,000 unique listeners. So doing a great job, and we're going to have a lot of great stuff for everybody, and hopefully everybody's looking forward to a fun season.
Absolutely.
Thanks, bud. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. Talk soon.
We'll throw it to Coach Campbell now with the entirety of his press conference from Ames this morning.
You know, I think from my end, obviously, I would just say this as we get started with the season, from my own standpoint with our own team, just a sincere appreciation from January on. This group has done a great job in terms of really a deep dive in getting better and growth. And, you know, I know from my end, we're excited to get the football season going. You know, certainly a ton of respect for Coach Farley. This UNI team's a very veteran team like us. In a lot of ways, really talented in critical areas, and think it'll be a great challenge for us. So, Randy, if you want to get started, we'll roll.
Yeah, Matt, last night on the radio show, you said, I think I got this somewhat close, that John asked you about the fans coming back to the stadium, 61,000 strong or whatever it is, and you said it could take some time for your guys to get used to that. That was interesting to me. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that's a very, you know, I think it'll be a really unique dynamic this fall, and not just for Iowa State football. I think, you know, holistically across the board, you know, one thing last year when there weren't fans in the stands, I think that was a whole new dynamic. But you almost learned to appreciate the game in its own sense, where you took the emotion out of it from the fan standpoint of it, and you almost got down to football in the backyard again a little bit, and you realized that you create your own momentum. And I think sometimes the mirage of a fan base, the mirage of game day experience, you know, is a thing, and you have to realize it's a thing, but it's also a mirage. It really doesn't dictate the outcome of the game. You dictate the outcome of the game as the players. And so I just think there'll be a heightened sense of energy. There'll be a heightened sense of emotion that will be created from, you know, a fan base and the energy of a crowd. And I think adapting to that and not letting that overtake your performance, I think, is a big thing. thing, and something we've certainly talked about. And, you know, it's your preparation and your detail is going to have to match the energy that's going to be created by, you know, an ulterior energy that'll be created a little bit by a fan base and all the things that come with that. So I just think that's a new thing that we're going to have to be able to adapt back to, that it may sound easy, but I think the reality of it for 18 to 22 year olds, we'll all feel that on Saturday. And I think it's a special feeling, but how do you control it and not let it overtake you?
Do you have any superstitions about when you run onto the field, that you look up into someplace in the stands and make sure that person is there all the time, or somebody is there in the area, or?
I think as a coach, no. I think as a player, certainly probably did that a little bit. But, I think from my standpoint now in the coaching aspect, no. But, you know, I do think trying to find a way to center ourselves before the game, I do think is really important. And however you do that, everybody's a little bit different.
Matt, you mentioned how you and I as a very veteran team, and obviously defensively,
yeah,
that's where they've stood out and stood out against you a couple of years ago. Who on that unit impresses you, and what about that unit impresses you?
I think the thing that probably impresses me the most is how well they're coached. And I say that they do so many different things defensively. You know, even the evolution of since we played them in 19 to, you know, now who they are in 2021, you know, they've played so many different defenses. And the thing that's so impressive is they're always in the right place where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there. And I think that to me is much as the who, you know, I think they're really talented on the defensive line. You know, they got long athletic corners. You know, the safety position, whether it's a two high safety look or a three high safety look, you know, there's really talented players there. But to me, the most impressive thing, they're always in the right spot, and to be able to be so multiple, and you've heard me talk about that from our end, is multiplicity is the key because it creates confusion. I think that's the thing that probably impresses me as much as anything.
What has J.R. Singleton done to put himself in a position to start for you guys?
Well, I think JR has come with a mindset since January, and he really flashed at times last fall for us, and I was really impressed with his veteranness approach at such a young age. I think that's one thing I've seen from young, talented players that have put themselves in the opportunity to play early in our program, is there's a great sense of maturity in how they go about their work, and JR brings that. You know, JR is he's the same guy every day. He's been on a relentless pursuit to become the best version of himself that he can be. And, you know, you know what you're going to get from JR Singleton every single day. And I think that alone, then you add in his talent, you know, I think he's got elite athleticism for a big guy. He's certainly got all the tools to be able to run sideline to sideline. And so I think from his standpoint, it's the consistency of that approach that he's been able to display so far that's really allowed him to put himself in a great position to help our team be successful.
When we talked to you earlier this month, you talked about how as a program climbs up the ladder, you can begin to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping you could describe what that feeling is and what your message to your team is about the rung you're at now.
Yeah, you know, I think those were things, you know, I probably would put that as, man, how we felt in 18, 19, 20, you know, and I think to me, it's just knowing that the expectations that we have for ourselves in terms of what we've been able to create, who we've been able to come, there's a standard of excellence of how we do everything that is demanded day in and day out. And I think sometimes when you fall short of that, whether it's in the weight room or in practice, you really stick out. And whether that's a global team performance or that's an individual performance. And, you know, I say this a lot in our own meeting room is, man, you can't hide here anymore. You know, if you're not going to do it to the standard, it sticks out. And so, I think it's more of that mindset in terms of our day-to-day approach than it is anything else. And, you know, I think early on you could kind of hide because it was, you know, it was easy to talk about it, but it was hard to show that. And now I think it's being shown by some of the top players in our program and what that looks like, what that excellence looks like day in and day out. And, you know, really holding those guys accountable to it, but also everybody else in the program.
You talk a lot about how the standard is to become the best version of yourself. How does that get redefined, or how did that get redefined from January to now? Because obviously the best version last year is going to be different than this year, theoretically.
Well, to the outside world, maybe. I think to the inside world, you know, it started back at square one with every one of our individuals. How does Mike Rose become the best version of himself? To how does, you know, a guy like J.R. Singleton, who's never played a game for us yet or played a lot of snaps for us yet, become the best version of himself? Everybody, I think that was the one unique puzzle that I had to put together, and myself, our staff, our strength staff, is how does this team become its best version of us? And you've got so many different dynamics. You know, you got a set of veteran guys that have played a lot of football. How do we improve those guys? How do those guys take another step forward? You know, we got a big chunk of guys that have played marginally, you know, and some guys played with success, some guys haven't played with a lot of success. How do we get those guys and figure out the consistency and be able to get those guys to play to the level of excellence we need? And then, man, there's this whole group of young guys that haven't played a down yet. How do we get these guys in terms of improvement and growth? And so I really think for us, this has been the most unique puzzle that we've had to put together, just because you have so many different guys and so many different groups of guys that needed so many different things. And I think that's been the unique challenge, honestly, for this football team to come together. And, you know, I think it'll show, man, did we put it together right? Are we on track as we get into the competitive element of the football season? And now you win or lose a football game. Those are the things that are exciting as the coach. But that's been the challenge, really, in the offseason for myself and our staff.
I don't think they've officially named a starter at quarterback yet, but I mean, Will McElvain's back, and you guys obviously played against him in 2019. How have you seen him maybe grow and studying him, and what did he do in that game in 2019 that maybe gave you guys some trouble?
Yeah, you know, I think, as you know, I'm a huge Will McElvain fan, just because I love guys that are competitive excellence. And I think the thing that when I watch Will play, he's an elite competitor. You know, I really go back to the 19 season, and you'll watch the run that they make through the playoffs, right? And I think it's almost the national semifinal game where, you know, he's leading that football team and plays break down. Tough situations come. You go to that playoff game at South Dakota State, and it's an incredible football game. And he makes two critical plays at the end of that football game to continue them in the tournament, you know, and continue playing. And so I think, to me, what he brings to the table is he's an elite competitor on every play. You know, you watch how he approaches every play, and he's playing every play to win every single play. And to me, that's impressive. And when the quarterback's got that dynamic, that mentality, your team feeds off of that. And he certainly has shown that, you know. And I even last season, I mean, you know, I somewhere down the line was out for a little bit. I came back that last game they played against North Dakota State. He was outstanding. I thought he was elite. And so be a great challenge for us, just because anytime a quarterback's got that mobility and mentality, I think that he gives their team a chance to win week in and week out. And I think he's shown that. Really, every game he started, they've had a chance to win that football game.
What has Darian Porter done to work himself into a position to play more snaps on Saturdays? And how is he emblematic of that young group you talked about, being excited seeing them out there more?
Yeah, you know, I think when I think about that group at receiver, you know, there's two guys that have really, since January, made this, I would say, transformational change. And Darian has been one of those guys. Easy Anderson's been one of those guys. And, you know, I think both of them have started with, how do I become the best version of me? You know, I think both those guys had incredible January, February, March, April, and May in terms of their physical growth process. You know, I think Easy went from 212 pounds to 230 pounds. You know, Darian Porter, you know, almost up to 200 pounds, and a guy that can really run and a physical football player. Both guys can play on all four of our special teams almost in every situation and bring a unique dynamic. And then I think, again, earning the trust of what they did in all those other areas as camp went on, it was like, man, these guys are now earning more reps on the offense, and then all of a sudden more opportunities became these moments in camp to do something, and they showed up. And so, you know, I think for both of those guys, I'm really proud of them. I think both of them have really high ceilings and are just kind of getting started in terms of overall what they can give this football team and this program.
On the depth chart, kick returner was listed as TBD. I don't think that's a player on your team. So who are some of those people competing for that kick returner spot?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, you know, we've talked about guys like Breece has been back there and been able to do some different things for us. Xavier has been back there. Jalen Knoll's been back there. You know, there's a lot of guys back there that, you know, we feel really confident with the ball in their hand. And so, you know, I think that's kind of a, you know, until you get into the season and see what it is and kind of see where we're at, I think that's kind of a revolving door right now until, you know, we can really get some live looks at exactly what that looks like for us. But I think we feel really confident with the guys and the names of that can be back there for us.
And then on the offensive line, the right side of the line, both right guard and right tackle, you have three guys, Daryl Simmons, Derek Schweiger, and then Derek Schweiger and Remsburg. Yeah. How fluid is that right side of the line right now? And I mean, all three of those guys are proven, so how confident are you that you'll figure something out there?
Well, I think I'd say there's a lot of fluidity in the entire offensive line right now. You know, I think there's a lot of competition. The left side's not nailed down. The right side's not nailed down. I think, you know, you better come to practice on Tuesday and Wednesday if you expect to play on Saturday. And so now confident, man, I feel really confident because I think a lot of those guys have earned the right to have that conversation where, you know what, there's 8-9 guys right now that are competing to start on Saturday. And, you know, who's playing? How much are they playing? It's really going to be earned by what they do in practice.
Matt, last year was a totally different feel than coming into this week. I mean, can you kind of sum up those differences for you as a head coach? And how do you make sure that you guys come out of the gates the right way this year versus what happened last year?
Yeah, well, I don't know if there's ever a guarantee, you know, because I think, again, the dynamics changed. It's a total different dynamic. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is taking what we learned a year ago. I would say the biggest difference is, you know, there was probably a week and a half period where we didn't know if we were playing or who was even able to play for us in preparation for game one. And, you know, at least we know what we're preparing for. And not so much I'm talking the opponent piece of it. I'm talking about the, man, what are some of these unique challenges that are going to come back from leaving a football season last year to, you know, entering a football season and knowing that the environment's going to be very different than the environment we played in a year ago. I thought, you know, I remember thinking last year through the third quarter of the game is what an awkward, you almost felt like you were in such an awkward environment and setting and, you know, felt a little bit of, you know, in my own right of, boy, I did a poor job of preparing our team for whatever this is because I don't even know what this is, you know, it felt like for a little while. But, I, you know, we adapted and we grew. And I think that's the thing about a first game every football season, you know, but I do think, again, your environment's completely different. So you better be ready to understand what some of those maybe problems and challenges are and be ready to handle it, let alone playing a really talented opponent with a, you know, a veteran football coach who, you know, Randy said it, he's played really good against us.
The $90 million building in which we're in right now, was when you came to Iowa State, did this come up in a conversation with you and Jamie, or when you did your, I don't know, one of your contract deals, did it come up in discussion? And beyond that, what does this building show about the commitment that Iowa State's making to you and your program and student athletes as a whole around here?
Yeah, you know, the first part of it, I really, you know, I think after year one, you said, man, what are some of the things you need? You would hope to catch up. You know, we needed a new locker room, you know, and I think really our conversation, Jamie and I's conversation started with, man, how do we create a new locker room? And at Iowa State where, you know, you're in a setting where you'd love to give your kids just some space where they've got the ability to, you know, whether it's a player's lounge or something like that, we didn't have any of that. You know, and you got to remember, you know, you're talking 5 years ago, we didn't even have an athletic, you know, feeding our guys program within our walls. And, you know, I think by at that time, probably 90% of football had some of nutrition plan. And so, you know, I think where we're at today is we're catching up to where everybody else has been and is at. And, you know, I think from my end of it, you then look at Jamie did a phenomenal job, you know, President Winterstein of putting a vision, not just for football, just for, man, the student athlete piece of things. I think when you go up to the third floor and you look at the student athlete academic center, you know, what we've got the ability to do in terms of housing, tutoring for all of our student athletes, I think outstanding. The nutrition piece on the fourth floor, phenomenal. You know, what they were able to do there for all of our student athletes. And I know right now it's just football as we're kind of opening and working out the kinks, but, you know, I think soon be open to all of our student athletes. And then, you know, I think you talk about even life after athletics, and certainly in the football world, I've talked a lot about that in our own program. And to be able to house all that in one place, I do think that's been a huge commitment to us, our program. And I just think, again, student athletes want to see, man, what are you doing, and what are you doing to put my experience as the best experience we possibly can have? And I think anytime you can show a commitment from the athletic department, from the university, I think that's huge. And so I just think sincere appreciation from my end, you know, really excited about what's opening up. You know, we're just kind of getting in here and getting used to it, but I think it's certainly been a huge benefit for our team already in a short amount of time that we've been able to be here.
I don't know how much you followed this story, but I'm just interested to know your thoughts. Zeb Nolan's probably going to be the first guy to ever join a program as a graduate assistant and be the week one starting quarterback for South Carolina this week. What are your thoughts on that? And then what do you think has allowed Zeb to be able to do something like that?
Yeah, you know, I'm excited for Zeb. I knew Zeb was going to, you know, he had texted me when he was going to go to South Carolina as a graduate assistant, which I thought, you know, I had met Coach Reamer right before the Big 12 championship game last year as he got named the head coach, I think, right before our game. And felt like, man, what a neat guy, and felt like he's going to do a great job. And for Zeb to be able to get his first experience going there as a coach, I thought would be really good for Zeb and to start his career. And, you know, I think circle back to what would allow Zeb to be successful. You know, I think Zeb coming from a coaching family, you know, I think for Zeb, the ability to, man, he's already done that one time, you know, went to a great program around great quarterbacks, around a great football team, his ability to adapt. And, you know, I think if I read the story right, there's an injury there to the guy that maybe was going to be the quarterback. And I'm sure Zeb's gone in there and been a huge asset in terms of helping the players prepare, that, you know, I think it makes sense that this opportunity came his way and he was able to capitalize on it. So I'm excited for him. I you know, I'm a big Zeb fan, you know, from recruiting him at the University of Toledo to recruiting him here, his family, what he's about, what he stands for. Zeb's a great kid, and, you know, great for him. Hopefully he can do a great job for those guys.
Matt, you mentioned the young receivers earlier. I'm curious what stood out about Jalen to, you know, allow him to make that two deep.
Yeah, you know, I think very similar to some of the things that I talked about in J.R. Singleton's standpoint, the maturity and understanding of accountability to be your best day in and day out. And I think that's really hard for young guys to understand that. You know, I think sometimes it's repetition and training age that allows great players to play great all the time. And yet, you know, from January to where we are today, I feel like Jalen's been on a mission to prove that he has that kind of maturity in our program. His work ethic in the winter program was exceptional. What he did in spring was exceptional. His summer was exceptional. And, you know, that leads into fall camp where he had opportunities to prove what kind of football player he was. And I would say there were moments where he was exceptional there. And so, you know, I think he's really put himself in a position to help our football team. How much, which ways, you know, I think that'll be a growth process as the season grows. But really excited about Jalen, certainly what he stands for.
What's your prep then for UNI like, given how disrupted their season was at FCS, even more than you guys had, and then, you know, losing their OC a week before the year? What's just been that dynamic been like?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing is what when I think you prepare for UNI, number one, I almost feel like in the spring season, they had so many challenges in terms of some injuries and whatever came their way, that it was maybe a great benefit to them because they got to play a lot of guys, and a lot of those guys played really good football. And to be honest with you, I think playing football games in the spring is probably going to allow them to get off to a really good start of playing football. It's not so long ago that they played in a football game. And, you know, I think for me, when you talk, you and I always think of Coach Farley, because I think one of the things that he has always done, and I talk about complimentary football, they do a phenomenal job of playing complimentary football. You know, every game that they play in seems, you know, right down to the wire. They always give themselves a chance to win. Their defense complements their offense complements their defense, and they do a great job on special teams, making sure they don't make mistakes and give themselves a chance, especially with some dynamic playmakers at the returner positions for them. So, you know, to me, I think no matter what's going to change schematically, it won't be far off, because I think Coach Farley does such a great job of manipulating those pieces and putting his team in position to be successful.
Do you need to remind guys of 2019, or are there enough players set that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, you can talk, I think for us, and it's not even about a single team, I think it's 2020, 2019, you know, I don't think it's more so being prepared to play in the first game, but having a great respect for who you're playing. You know, I think you're talking about, again, a team that's very veteran, a team that's been highly successful if you look at just their 2019 season, and I think, you know, the win-loss record of whatever the spring looked like was a little bit skewed because of, you know, I think the uniqueness of the season. But man, I think you're talking about maybe one of the most veteran teams we'll play this fall, in a team that's got dynamic playmakers at critical positions. And I think that's the thing that's been exciting for our kids, because I think they got their attention right away because of who is at those position groups, and the wide receiver group, the defensive line group, the quarterback group. You know, there's some great players, tailback, you know, big time transfer there that we know is a great player. So I think it'd be a really unique challenge for all of us.
And you talked a little bit about that, Matt. I mean, obviously, your program under you guys seem to get better as the season goes on. But with this year's high expectations, high goals, how imperative is it to start out week one on a good note and at least put together something impressive that these guys can be proud about?
Yeah, I'm not trying to impress anybody. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're just trying to get to game one, play game one, see where we're at, and kind of see where this football team is. You know, and I think, again, that's, you know, to me, that's all stuff for you guys to talk about and write about and have fun with. But, you know, my end of it is, man, where are we? You know, and I'm really excited to play, because I have always said the bright lights will tell you where you're at. And, you know, there's been times where we've been ready for the early start of the season, and maybe there's times where we thought we were ready, but maybe we weren't. And so, you know, I think you diligently work really hard to try to put yourself and your team in the best position to get ready for the start of the season. But I'm excited for Saturday, because I think it's a great challenge. It's going to be a great football game. You're going to demand, they're going to demand that you be at your best. And if you're not, they'll be ready to beat you.
Matt, how much do you put on Brock Purdy for play calling? I know he's evolved in his ability to read the defenses, that kind of thing. Then second part of that, how much do you think Kyle Kemp has maybe helped Brock really along the way into the senior year?
Yeah. You know, I think there's certain times that we'll hand over some of those, you know, play calling opportunities or opportunity to maybe give him a play or two, and then let him put us in the best play. Kyle has been, you know, Coach Manning and I talked about Kyle a couple weeks ago as we were getting ready for fall camp. I mean, Kyle is on this trajectory, in my opinion, as a coach, as good as anybody that we have. I mean, he's brilliant. I think his ability to relate to the players has been so huge. You know, you talk even just Hunter, too. You know, Hunter's been able to go into the games, and, you know, when he got in last year, and I thought was really efficient. And so much credit, honestly, Coach Gordon does a great job. But to be able to have a guy like Kyle, who's played in the system, that understands it, then the emotions of it, and then also, man, he's been the guy that had to be kind of waiting, and he's also been the guy with all the pressure on his shoulders. I just think his relatability to our players has been really special, and to have him in our program, I think it's been huge for all of us. I think he's a calming force on the sidelines. I think he's got the ability to relate to our offense and to certainly our quarterbacks, why Coach Gordon and Coach Manning are up in the box. And I think he brings I think if you guys know Kyle, he's got a very mild-mannered demeanor about himself. He's always calm, and he's always right here, and, you know, he helps me be right there, you know, sometimes, which is nice. Sometimes I can look at Kyle and he can bring me back to kind of where I need to be. So, you know, Kyle's done a phenomenal job. Really, I do think he's had a great impact on Brock. I think he's had a great impact on our quarterback room, and I think he's certainly had a great impact in our program as a coach.
Matt, you opened fall camp and said that this team was well over 90% vaccinated, and you hoped by the opener that they would be close to that 100%. Are you there yet? And I guess what was your message to the team to get to that point?
Yeah, I don't know if I had a message to get to that point other than, you know, again, I know I talked about at the beginning. I think our job is to just continue to try to you know, give our young men the best information of how to keep them safe, how to help themselves moving forward. And, you know, that's really, you know, our job in terms of a teaching aspect of it. But, you know, again, I let all of our guys make the best decision for them and their family. And, you know, are we closer to it? I think we're a little bit closer to it. Are we 100%? We're not. But, you know, those are all things where we'll just continue to handle those situations as they come week in and week out for us.
Matt, when you look back at the offseason and everything you did last year, did it feel like it took a while to get to this point? How does the offseason kind of feel to you year in and year out? Does it change?
Yeah, I think every year is a little bit different. You know, I to me, it's been there's been so much change in this offseason for us, and I think the uniqueness of, like, the challenges for myself and maybe our staff and everybody, you know, in the program in terms of, geez, how do we find the inches and the growth that we need to make in our program, and it's going to create all of us to do some things differently. I think that almost there was a great enjoyment of change and kind of got us out of our comfort zone. I think really forced us to uniquely learn and do different things and really do it in the best benefit of, man, we're doing everything in our power to put our kids in the best position to be successful, all of our kids. And so, you know, I think this has been one of those off seasons that it doesn't feel like it flew by, and it certainly doesn't felt like it dragged by. You know, it's kind of almost enjoyable to kind of go through each block knowing that it was a little bit different and a great challenge for all of us.
Is that something that have you had seasons where it has felt like it's gone really fast or it has gone really slow?
I think that first season it felt like we needed about another 2 years before we got on the football field. So I think that one went really fast.
There's a lot of places where big schools would probably be hesitant to play an FCS opponent that has been as good as what UNI has for as long as they have. Why is this game important to play? Not just for, you know, because obviously it's the first game, but for the state of Iowa and for football in the state.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question too. I think, you know, just being in this state now 5-6 years, and I think you understand the players in this state of all, you know, especially the three schools that play Division I football. You know, gosh, it means something. And I think, you know, they're highly competitive games. You want to play games where, man, it means something, and there's something on the line. Especially, you know, for us, geez, you play in a conference where every game you got to have it on the line. And so I think when you have such a rivalry that comes with these in-state games, it forces you that Zoom focus that you actually get in conference play, and it makes you be your best from the beginning of the season on, because you know you're going to get the best shot no matter what in-state team you're going to play. Everybody wants to win that game because there's so much on the line. So to me, I do think it makes it, number one, it makes it unique. Number two, I think it makes it really special, and, you know, especially when you play a program that has had elite success, you know, it forces you to play your A game right away. And I've said that in this conference, if you play your B or C game here, you're going to get beat. If you play your B or C game in these rivalry games, you're going to get yourself beat.
Coach, what have you seen from the special teams unit, specifically kickoff coverage, punt coverage, and just the kicking game in general?
Yeah, you know, I think they've done a really good job so far. You know, we'll see on Saturday, you know, where we're at. Again, I think those are things that, man, it's easy to sit up here and say, man, I feel great about it or I feel bad about it. But the lights will be on Saturday at 3:30, and then maybe ask me that question afterwards. Hopefully I'll have a good answer.
We got time for one more question for Coach.
Coach, for a guy like Greg Eisworth, 6-year senior, you know, been through a lot, what's it like for the staff and this team to see him get the senior year that maybe he deserved with COVID last year?
Yeah, I think for all those guys, you know, that's that senior class that came back here. You know, you talk about Chase and Greg and Annie. You know, those are guys that we wouldn't be where we are today without those players. And, you know, I think really for all of those guys, and I think if you dive into their own story, they've missed all seasons where they didn't get to train. Maybe it's because of injury, different things that have happened to all those guys. And to watch them use January, February, March, April, to watch them be able to train all off season, to be able to move into this facility in June, late June, early July, and be able to have, man, a first class training table for them. You know, I have a great locker room. To me, that's special, because one thing that they've done is they've done a great job of using using the weight room, using the training table, using those things to their benefit to become the best version of themselves they can be. So I'm really excited because I think not only did they use it the right way, they've really been able to have a great advantage in terms of understanding why, you know, their time is short and it's running out, why it's so critical to use it. And I think it had a huge impact on the rest of our players, to be honest with you. So without those guys, you know, we wouldn't be here and really proud of really what they've done even with this team, because I think their leadership from January on has really transcended through all of the rest of our young guys in our program.
All right, thanks, Joe.
All right, guys, thank you.